your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with your host, the mother-daughter team of Dr. Gloria Horsley and Dr. Heidi Horsley. Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi have devoted their lives to helping individuals move forward after a profound loss and each week share stories of hope and understanding. They dedicate their show to their son and brother Scott and to others who have lost loved ones. Now join Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi and share the journey from grief and loss to hope and renewal.
Hello, I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley.
Each week, Heidi and I welcome you to Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and conversation with those who suffered the loss of a loved one and for healthcare professionals who work in this most difficult field. As always, the message is, others have been there before you and made it. You can too. You need not walk alone. If you're listening to our show today, it is pre-recorded, and so you won't be able to call in. But we hope that you'll visit us through thegriefblog.com and visit our foundation, the Open to Hope Foundation. The all shows can be downloaded on iTunes, and transcripts can be accessed on our blog. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning, Mom. How are you?
Great. I just wanted to mention a little bit about the holidays because it is Halloween coming up. And Halloween is such a strange holiday for everyone. For some people, it's nothing, but if you've got kids, it can be really difficult, can't it?
I think if you're someone that has had a child or a sibling die, Halloween is a hard, hard day. And I know that some people feel it's the hardest holiday because there's all sorts of small children running around the city and the streets in your neighborhood with costumes on. And I think it brings back a lot of good memories, which are bittersweet now.
That's right. And, you know, those costumes, too, are kind of generic, and you might even see one that your child wore or whatever. And also for siblings, it's rough, isn't it, Heidi?
Absolutely, because like you said, you see costumes and it reminds you of past Halloweens, and it could be your sibling or your child inside that costume because, you know, they have masks on and it reminds you of people you've loved. I mean, I think they can be very hard days, and people are coming to your house and they're ringing the doorbell, and there's a lot of little kids, and it brings back a lot of reminders.
So you might want to think about, you know, you've got a week to think about what you want to do with it, if you want to go somewhere else, if you want to have a friend answer the door, if you want to leave your house dark, if you want to go out and do what you always did, you know. It's probably good to plan a little bit ahead of what you want to do this year, don't you think, Heidi?
I absolutely agree with you, and decide, like you said, there's many alternatives of things that you can do. And, you know, if it's too hard, I mean, obviously, if you have children, you have to bring them trick-or-treating because they love that holiday. You might want someone else to bring them trick-or-treating for you if it's too hard, because you want it to be a positive experience for them.
Absolutely. So, yeah, we've always said that, you know, you want to, you know, I thought, well, you can curl up in bed and turn off the lights, but, you know, that's sometimes not possible if you have kids. So take care of yourself and blog in and tell us what your plans are. Could be very helpful for a lot of other people,
and,
too.
And speaking of that, Mom, we are going to start posting articles on our Open to Hope Foundation site about the holidays and tips from people of what they've done that has been helpful and helped them get through the holidays.
And if you have some tips, please send us and we'll put your tips up, too. Well, Heidi, we've got a friend and a great guest today starting the show, Carla Wheeler, founder of Quality of Life Publishing. And we're excited about having her on the show because she is the publisher of our wonderful new book, Real Men Do Cry, that we wrote with Eric Hipple. It's his biography, and it is an NFL quarterback for the Detroit Lions. He's retired, and it's his inspiring story of tackling depression and suffering suicide loss after the death of his son, Jeff. I think it's about 8 years ago now, right, Heidi?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we had the wonderful privilege of writing this book with Eric, and it's been really a great experience. He's a great guy, and it's, I think, quite an inspiring story. So Heidi and I hope that you'll go to his website, erichipple.com, and also Quality of Life website, and you can also find it on our website.
Yeah, so it's a Heidi, great book for the men in your lives.
Right, exactly.
Or for the men that are listening, because it is a real man's story about how he tackled depression and how he survived suicide loss, and it's in his words.
Yep. So, Heidi, would you like to introduce our guest today?
Yes, I'd be honored to. As you said, Mom, our first guest today is our friend and publisher, Carla Wheeler, and our topic is hospice and end-of-life issues. Carla Wheeler is founder of Quality of Life Publishing, which publishes books and periodicals to help families served by hospice. She lost her husband, Jerry, to a brief bout with cancer in 2006, which put her hospice experience to the test. Welcome to the show, Carla.
Oh, thank you, Heidi. Thank you, Gloria. And also, I want you to know your book, Real Men Do Cry, is already helping so many people out there. We are getting fantastic feedback, and so we're just privileged to have joined with all of you in helping people in such important ways out there.
Well, thank you. It's been really wonderful working with you. Well, tell us a little bit about you and your story about your husband's death. Now, what was his name? Heidi and I were...
His name is Jerry, pronounced like it's J-E-R-R-Y, even though his was spelled with a British spelling. So.
Right, it's with G, and that's why Heidi and I were a little bit questioning when I said Jerry, and Heidi said, oh, I'm not sure it's Jerry, and I said, I think it is.
Well, you know, having been married to a Canadian for almost 30 years, I'm used to all those weird spellings, at least to us Americans, they seem weird. Yeah, so Jerry was diagnosed out of the blue, perfectly healthy 54-year-old, and he was talking about stomach problems. Long story short is it ended up that he had extensive advanced cancer all throughout his abdomen and into his chest. And he died about a month after being diagnosed with this cancer.
How did he find out that that's what it was? I mean, because a lot of people have stomach problems and stress, et cetera.
Yes. Well, what I did was the morning he had been having some night sweats, and he had been on an antibiotic for some fungal infection, and I just assumed that that was just one of the side effects of the antibiotic. But what I did is the morning he woke up, and he had been talking about his abdomen getting larger, but, you know, we're middle-aged people, so that happens to a lot of us. But the morning he woke up and he said that it was tender to the touch, I went on the Mayo Clinic website and I put in all the symptoms and it came back, go to the emergency room. So that's what we did.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep, and they did a biopsy and learned the type of cancer it was. And, you know, the doctors, nurses, oncologists, everybody, oh, they went bent over backwards to try to help him. He did undergo some chemo. But finally, it had spread to his lungs to the point where he had such difficulty breathing, so they had to put him on life support in the intensive care unit. And if you've ever seen someone, I know, you know, Gloria, you're a former nurse, someone on life support like that, they can't communicate with you, and quality of life is just non-existent. So as it was clear that he was dying, we as a family got together and made the most heart-wrenching decision that I think I'll ever have to make in my life, and that was to honor his living will and remove him from life support. Now, he hadn't been a hospice patient because hospice is usually more about the compassionate care.
And you were involved in hospice before Jerry died, right?
That is true. I had been a hospice volunteer for 15 years and four other immediate
family. How did you get into hospice originally?
Originally because my dear grandmother had what I call a beautiful death 20 years ago. I was by her side when she took her last breath. And it was a beautiful death because she had hospice nurses coming to the home, to her home, and helping to care for her. And she died without pain, without physical pain, without spiritual, emotional, financial pain, and that was all thanks to hospice. So I decided to become a hospice volunteer and then just knew that someday that I would channel my publishing and writing efforts to help people to learn that death is not the enemy and that people we love do not have to die alone or fearful or in any kind of pain.
Now, with Jerry's death, how long has it been since he died?
We're just celebrating 2 years.
Wow. Very, very, very new.
It is still very,
you know,
very new.
I would say that your hospice experiences have really brought you through because in meeting you, I feel that you're more together than a lot of people would be after, you know, 2 years. In fact, I met you last summer.
And,
so
you know, you
less.
Are right. With each experience that we have with a family member or even a beloved pet. In fact, I tell you, right now I'm in my home office, and I'm doing kitty hospice. We adopted, my daughter and I adopted two darling little kittens, siblings, 3 months ago. And the little girl, the female, died of this rare virus, and they told us that this little Harry, the little guy, he might have it as well. And just the last 2 days, he stopped eating. He can't walk. He can't move. So I decided he doesn't look like he's in pain. He's curled up on his blanket here. And I am doing with him what I have done with so many dying hospice patients, is just reassure Harry here that he is loved.
Are you reassuring yourself that you're loved?
Yes, I am. You know, he's sending me those messages.
We will reassure you that you are loved. We love you.
And I've got to say, when people lose pets, I think it they're not only mourning the loss of the pet, which is very, very traumatic, but it brings back so many issues of loss for those that they love and what that person
went
through. Oh,
in fact, you are so right. The day that the vet called me to tell me what the blood work was for little Harry here and that he thought he had the same disease, the whole day, I just cried my eyes out, and I realized that I was not just crying for this little five-month-old kitten. I was crying my dear Jerry's death. I was crying for my mother and my father and my father-in-law and my grandmother.
Your past losses.
I often think that pets, that's one of the beautiful roles that they play in our lives because they allow us to get that pain out through the tears. And that is just such a blessing to be able to get that.
Well, I think that that having you adopt two little kittens too is something. We got a dog after Scott was killed, and I think you're so wanting to bring something new into the family. You've lost so much, and I think some people do other things like going on buying sprees or, you know, do some strange things. We have to be careful right after because there's a desire to bring things in. And for you, you sound like an animal lover. For some people, they'll bring in animals and they're not prepared for the responsibility of, say, a new puppy that is peeing all over the house and that kind of thing. So we need to be careful, but they can be wonderful things to bring in.
Most definitely.
And give us a lot of unconditional love.
And, you know, and I also want you to know that with my hospice experience, you know, hospice generally cares for patients who have some sort of a lingering illness. Hospice can also be there for a family when it's been an unexpected death, some sort of a, you know, an accident or some kind of a natural disaster. They will be there to provide a bereavement follow-up.
Now, did hospice come in for you with Jerry?
They did, and this is, you know, I consider myself an expert in hospice, and I used to consider myself an expert in grief, but then I learned that, no, that, you know, when it happens in our own lives, there are no experts. But what happened is I thought I knew everything there was to know about hospice. And the day that we made that heart-wrenching decision to take him off life support, honor his living will, his mother came down from Canada, his other family members, and our daughter Jenny and I, we were all surrounding him in this teensy little ICU room, and the hospice nurse was there. And she said, would you like me to join you? And I said, well, but he hasn't been a patient of yours. And she said, I'm stationed at the hospital to help in situations like this. And I said, oh, I didn't know that. I had no idea. This nurse saved the day. She heard that many of us were from Canada, and so she went and made us a pot of tea, served us tea like the Queen of England would have, and that helped us so much. And then once the nurses removed the ventilator, they called us back into the room, and we all sat around, and Jerry lived for about 45 minutes, and the nurses...
Wow, that's a really tough time, isn't it?
Oh,
really hard for those families out there.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I'm sure that's bringing memories for other people out there of those moments waiting, making the decision, and you hold your breath to see if they're going to take another breath, and they do.
And you know that
but they don't.
We had the heart monitor was still on three times. What they call flatlined, where it looked like he was gone, and we would go up and kiss him and pay our respects, and then he'd come back again. I think he was just having a real hard time leaving, and that's again where my hospice experience helped, because I was able to reassure him that it's okay, just whenever you're ready, Jerry, go, and that, look, Jenny and I are surrounded by all of these people, all this love. We're going to be fine. And that hospice nurse, whenever Jerry did something like that or when it looked like he was struggling physically, she would just bend down and gently whisper in my Jenny's ear, this is normal. It's okay. Your dad isn't suffering.
What wonderful support. And it's time for us to go to break. And when we get back from break, we're going to talk a little bit more with Carla Wheeler about hospice and end-of-life issues. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. You can reach us through our blog, the Grief Blog, openthehopefoundation.com and through the Open to Hope Foundation. These shows are archived on our websites as well as the Compassionate Friends websites and can be downloaded on iTunes. Please stay tuned for more.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Hello, Doctors Gloria and Heidi are pleased to announce that their new book, Teen Grief Relief, Parenting with Understanding, Support, and Guidance, published by Rainbow Books, is now available. Grief Relief can be ordered through thegriefblog.com as well as Amazon. Book orders can be made through the Book Clearinghouse at 800-431-1579. This book is a must for any family suffering a loss. Get your copy right now at thegriefreliefblog.com or amazon.com.
Hello, my name is Neil Chethick. I'm the executive editor for the Open to Hope Foundation and author of the book Father Lost, How Sons Deal with the Death of Their Dad. As editor of the foundation, it's my job to find writers for our website, writers who would like to contribute their articles, poetry, and personal stories about grief, loss, hope, and recovery. If you'd like to write for our website, please contact me. You can do that by visiting opentohope.com. and click on the category, Write for Us. Then you can start bringing your words, your stories, to our fast-growing audience around the world.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and we're talking today with Carla Wheeler about hospice and end-of-life issues. Welcome back to the show, Carla and Gloria.
Thank you, Heidi.
Thanks.
Well, Carla, we haven't said much about Jenny. What a wonderful child she is, and an only child there. And you and she are going around and giving workshops.
We are, and that's one of the, 2 years now since Jerry, in our family, we call it Make Your Transition. Since he made his transition to what we believe is a pure spirit form, Jenny and I find that one of the actual gifts, we can use that word now, of her beloved dad, my husband of 30 years, of his making his transition so young, is that we can now go around and speak to others and just reassure them that, yes, this is, it's tragic and it hurts like nothing else, but we do heal. And Jenny and I are believers. We're from a family where we believe in signs of continued love. That's one of the books that I wrote is Afterglow, Signs of Continued Love.
Yeah, Afterglow, Signs of Continued Love. Where would people get that? We're going to put it up on our site.
Yeah, they can get it on Amazon. It is available through any bookstore. And what it is it's a compilation of stories that people had shared with me. I used to write a newspaper column about grief that would go out on the newswire, and people shared their stories with me for this book. And it's as simple as for Jenny and I seeing a dragonfly. That has been one of the signs from Jerry. And whenever we see a dragonfly, Jenny will kiss her fingers and raise them to heaven and say, "Thank you, Dad. Thank you, Dad. Thank you, Dad." And with signs of continued love, what we say to people when we go out and speak is some people will come up and say, "Well, but how do I know if a sign is real?" And we simply say, if it is meaningful to you, and if it brings you hope and comfort and makes you feel that love connection to that person who is no longer physically by your side, it is real.
It's hard to tell people about it, too, because I almost feel like now that it's almost I like to keep it to myself because it's so meaningful, because when you tell them, it's like, oh, I don't get it, you know? But, you know, if you just hold that, that's one of the nice things I think about journaling, too, and being a writer, is you can write those down. But I wanted to get to a couple of emails that we got, because I think you'd be a great one to deal with them. One person asks us, Jane says, my father died at home. However, when it came down to his difficulty breathing, my stepmother suddenly decided to call an ambulance, and he died at the hospital. I'm feeling really angry that he did not honor my, that we did not honor my father's wishes.
Oh, that is so hard. Oh, my heart goes out to her. And yes, I think I would feel that same way. Perhaps she can take comfort in knowing that most families in our society are death denying, and most families and doctors wait to call hospice and to bring in the hospice team, which in an instance with hospice in that situation, hospice would have provided what the patient needs, and then if anything happens, we call the hospice nurse rather than 911. But through her email and through her question being broadcast right at this moment, this is going to help so many other people to know that the doctor doesn't have to be the one to refer your loved one who is sick to hospice. As an immediate family member, you can pick up the phone and call your local hospice and just explain what's going on, even if you're living out of town. You know, say your father's sick and he's up in Illinois and you're over in Texas. You can still call that local hospice up in Illinois, explain that you're an immediate family member, and the hospice team will get in touch with the doctors involved to see if that patient could benefit from hospice.
And I also wanted to say to Jane, you know, your mother-in-law and father, if the hospice hasn't contacted you, and I assume maybe she's even from out of town, she ought to get in touch with that hospice.
Yep.
And they can tell her stories about her dad. They can reassure her. I mean, she wanted it to happen, but it's not always in our hands what happens.
That's right. So he was under hospice care.
He was under hospice. He wanted to die at home, but it sounds like...
I got you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that happens. If you don't have a hospice person right there and a community you know, it can be difficult to keep people home. I have been in situations where people really wanted to be home, and the family just cannot, in the end, when the person's not breathing or whatever, it's hard to support that.
Yes, it is. And also, I remember hearing Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who's considered the founder of the hospice movement. She passed away a few years ago, but I remember hearing her speak once, and she said that she fully believes that we choose where we will take our last breath, and that we can take comfort in that, even though perhaps those final circumstances were not what we think would bring the most peace of mind, that person, perhaps that man, didn't want to have the wife dealing with things. And so maybe at the last minute that was part of his choice, too. We'll just never know.
Who can know? Well, thank you, Jane, for that email. And then we received another email from a woman named June, and she said, my 10-year-old daughter died last year after a 3-year battle with leukemia. Her last illness, we were forced, because of insurance, to move her into an inpatient hospice. I really felt sad and frustrated because Deborah missed her special nurses and died with people she didn't know. It really seemed unfair. Now, that's an interesting one, because I know one of the battles we're having in California right now is that trying to get comprehensive care so that children can have the same health care providers when they leave the hospital, that they can go with them to hospice. But right now there is a disconnect, isn't there?
There is a disconnect, and my heart goes out to June. And, you know, I just feel Deborah right now is saying to her mom that all is well, Mom, because even though those weren't nurses that Deborah knew, those nurses are still trained to be among the most compassionate, loving, and caring. And even though there was that disconnect, I just feel like Deborah was very loved and felt loved. Mm-hmm. But yes, we need to implement a lot of changes out there. I just think it's time for our society to not be such a death denying society, and to realize that just, you know, we're all mortal beings.
Yeah, and you know, you can go out and do so some work on this. There's some national work going on. If when June feels up to it,
yes.
there are opportunities to work with legislatures right now.
Oh, definitely.
On changing healthcare issues, which, you know, we're always looking for service for people, aren't we, Heidi?
Absolutely. I was just thinking of the Initiative for Palliative Care because they're trying to do so much to educate the medical community about what people need that are dying.
Yes.
And what families need after death.
Oh, definitely. And see, that's part of the hospice umbrella, too, is that the family stays under the umbrella care for a whole year with any grief support needs that they might have. And I just think that is so awesome, rather than just...
Well, you're in Florida, though, I'll have to say, and there's a lot going on in hospice in Florida. It's very big down there, but some people are often in towns where there maybe not even a hospice close.
Mm-hmm. We need to change that, don't we? Or at least we need to have what they call the palliative care wings of hospitals, where, again, palliative care is a, you know, big fancy word for comfort care. My father-in-law had a good death in Canada, and they didn't have a hospice nearby, but when he went into the hospital, they put him in the palliative care wing so that, again, the nurses and doctors, the aides, everybody, they were social workers, they were all trained to help this man have an easy death and a pain-free death. So we do. We've got a lot of work out there.
And if you've got issues that you haven't resolved with relationship to the loss of a loved one, one thing you can do is contact your hospital, look for groups where they support people after loss. Compassionate Friends certainly is a group. You could get in hold of hospice. A lot of hospices have groups, you know, beyond, a past loss.
Yes.
One thing I found with sudden death, this was 1983, we never heard from a soul, did we, Heidi?
No, absolutely not.
Oh, back then, I can't imagine. In fact, I want to tell you, I have never been in a situation where someone, an immediate family member, has died unexpectedly. Cancer runs in my family, so you know the deaths all end up being these lingering deaths, and we know about hospice, but I cannot imagine not having that chance say my goodbyes and express my love. I just don't know how I would handle that for any of you out there, like the two of you with Scott, any of you where the death is unexpected. I just think that must be the most tragic of all situations.
You know, it's kind of interesting. My husband and I, Phil, had a discussion about this, and he said, we had a friend who died suddenly of a pulmonary embolism a few
mm-hmm.
weeks ago, and he said, "Oh, I don't want that to happen to me." And I said, "I want it to happen to me." I said, "I want to drop dead. If I drop dead, you know." And he said, "No, I'd rather have cancer." I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was like the metaphor that one of our guests said. She said, "You know, people are always saying which is an easier way to have someone die, terminal illness or sudden death," and she said it's like being in a car accident. You either see the Mack truck coming towards you or it hits you from behind.
Mm.
Either way, you're devastated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, very true.
Well, Carla, tell us about Quality of Life Publishing, how people would get to your site, and again,
yes.
Tell us your books that you've written.
Yes, we publish a growing family of self-help books, mostly anything to do with grief support, both for children and teens. My daughter has written a book for teens who are grieving, teen-to-teen talk, and also topics like depression, suicide prevention with Real Men Do Cry. And our website is QOL, the letters QOL, short for Quality of Life, publishing.com. And they can read about all of our books. All of our authors are available to come out and speak to groups. We just love doing that. Because each of us who has written a book has written it because it's an outgrowth of our own personal pain, our own personal path and journey, and how we're healing ourselves.
That's great. Well, Carla, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks,
Carla.
Thank you both. You're doing awesome work out
it's
there.
Wonderful talking to you. It's time for our break, and we want to thank Carla Wheeler for being on our show. Please stay tuned for our next segment when our guest will be Mary Treakey O'Keefe, and we will continue discussing end-of-life issues. You can visit us on our blog, thegriefblog.com. These shows are open, brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation. Please stay tuned for more.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hello, my name is Beverly McManus. In 2003, my husband Steve died of cancer. It's been a tough journey, but it's been softened by being part of the Open to Hope Foundation caring community. This year, Abel Keough, whose wife died by suicide, and I have launched the www.opentohopedeathofaspouse.com website. We're working hard to have timely articles and create a dialogue of support. The important thing to know is that you are not alone. We'd like to share your grief journey with you and others who have lost their partners and invite you to help us get the word out about the www.opentohopedeathofaspouse.com site. You can also reach us by going to opentohope.com and scrolling down to the bottom of the page where all of the Foundation blog links can be viewed. Thanks.
Hello, I'm Eric Kipple, former quarterback of the Detroit Lions and outreach coordinator of the University of Michigan Depression Center. It gives me great pleasure to announce the publication of my autobiography, Real Men Do Cry, a quarterback's inspiring story of tackling depression and surviving suicide loss, written with Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley, and published by Quality of Life. Real Men Do Cry takes you on my journey of fame and fortune to unbearable pain and depression following the death of my 15-year-old son, Jeff, and gives practical information on the warning signs and risks of depression. My story ends with an uplifting message of hope and recovery. I have faith that if I have made it, you can too. You can visit my website to learn more about my book at erichipple.com and more about depression on depressioncenter.org. Thank you.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and our second guest today is Mary Tracy O'Keefe. And our second topic is It Wasn't What I Expected, End of Life Issues. Mary Tracy O'Keefe is the author of Thin Places Where Faith is Affirmed and Hope Dwells, and is the co-founder of Well Within, a nonprofit holistic wellness resource center. She is an author, speaker, and spiritual director. Welcome back to the show, Gloria, and welcome to the show, Mary.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, Mary. It's great to have you on the show.
Hi, Gloria. And hi.
You know, one of the things we're going to be talking about today is something that we keep getting requests for, which is the loss of adult parents.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many people who are suffering about the loss of their adults. I shouldn't say adult parents, of course. The adults losing parents.
Yeah.
You know, there's just not a lot of validation for that in our society. And you wrote your book kind of in response, Thin Places Where Faith is Affirmed, in response to your father's dying, right?
Yes, and then my mother, less than 3 months later, yes.
Yeah, and less than 3 months later, your mother passed away. How long has it been?
It was 2002, so just over 6 years.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about your dad and mom.
I will. Thank you for asking. My father was a wonderful, funny, loving Irish Catholic who had 10 children in 13 years, and he was just...
Oh, my goodness, 10.
Yeah. Well, that's not untypical at all for a lot of us in St. Paul, Minnesota, where we have a lot of these large, like I said, Irish Catholic families. So we were all very close to each other and also very close to my parents. My father's own father had left his family when my dad was 10, and so I think, you know, an odd way our family benefited from that in that he just really made the effort to be very present to us. So what happened with him was in October of 2001, he was having lots of coughs and went in for some medical work, and the doctors found something suspicious, and he did not want to go in for further testing. And we all felt that he had a suspicion that he had lung cancer, which in fact he did have. So he held off till after Christmas, which gave us that one glorious gift of a final Christmas as a family before we lost both our parents. He was diagnosed the next day, December 26th, and was gone by February 6th of 2002. So that death was sort of sudden, but not unexpected. You know, we had that 6 weeks or so to really kind of get used to the process of his leaving us and also to say our goodbyes, so that was a great gift. Then, with my mother, she actually had a terminal diagnosis of pulmonary fibrosis. So we knew that we weren't going to have her for too many years.
Oh, my goodness, you had them both with the breathing thing, which is tough.
Which makes us wonder about what was going on in our house, by the way, because it was two different diseases. But, yes, both lung issues. So we were concerned about that. And we believe that the stress and sorrow and grief of my mother after losing my father certainly did not help her immune system, and she actually did not die of that illness. She died of a septic infection that she got, and I just don't think her body was up to fighting it.
Mm-hmm.
So she went into, they actually intubated her, and she never came out of a coma and died 10 days after that. So that one, that death, you just talked about Mack truck, that was a Mack truck death for us. We were still reeling after the death of our dad, and
mm-hmm.
it was relatively unexpected. It was hard.
Yeah, for sure. And your father was quite a character. And looking at your book in 10 places, you really get a flavor of what a guy he was, huh?
He was. Thank you. Thank you. I've gotten a lot of emails from people who I think grew up in similar situations with parents like that, and especially a dad with a great sense of humor. The Irish have tremendous wit, as you know, and we were the beneficiaries of that as well.
Now, talk about thin places. What are thin places?
Well, speaking of Irish, the concept of thin places is a Celtic one. And I've been interested in Celtic spirituality for quite a while. I'm about 75% Irish, and I've traveled there about 5 times. And the Celtic concept refers to geographic locations. Thin places are geographic locations. And perhaps your listeners or you both have been to places where you've just felt that connection to the divine.
Mm-hmm.
And the description is a thin place is somewhere where it's like the veil is very thin between this world and the next.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the Celtic concept. What I write about and other people write about as well is looking at thin places as those experiences in our life where the veil is very thin. And as you know, dying is a thin place, especially if you have a little bit more drawn out period of time. You'll hear these stories about people communicating with family members or friends who seem to come and greet them and all sorts of things. And so,
also the thin places, I remember my son sitting on the steps of our house in the house with my daughter and her friend and telling them that if anything happened to him, he knew he was going to a better place.
Oh.
And that was only days before he was killed. So I think those are the thin places, too.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right, Gloria. And in fact, I was just looking over some of my stories related to children, because I know you're so involved with Compassionate Friends, and I had a story similar to that of a little 4-year-old boy who was tragically killed right at home in a car accident. But he had been at Vacation Bible School the day before and the day of that accident, and he was creating rainbows. And on one, he had a rainbow where there was a cloud, and in the cloud it said, God loves Brett. Well, of course, since then, and I'm sure you've heard these stories, the family has had all sorts of stories about rainbows appearing. And the woman wrote me that on June 11th, 13 days later, to the day that her son died, her grandmother died. And, of course, she's looking then for the rainbow, this woman, and there it was. She
mm-hmm.
searches the sky, and there's the beautiful double rainbow. But, yes, there is that kind of, I almost call them pre-death situations, where you look back and you think, gosh, you know, we don't know why that happens, but did you find that consoling when that happened, when you thought back about that? Or how
it's kind of amazing. Heidi, do you have any thin place stories or that you've...
I was just struck by when you were talking about, and I remember that, and him saying that if he would be at peace, something to the effect that he would be at peace if he died, and then he went and died. It was actually very comforting to think back on that story.
Well, I was thinking of the thin place, Heidi, when you had a head-on collision, and you
mm-hmm.
finally and you realized that it would be all right,
mm-hmm.
and you thought you were going to die.
Right. Yes, it's true. Right. For any of you who've had near-death experiences, I did have a near-death experience. You're right. November of 2004, where I had a head-on collision, and I went in at the very. I kind of was fighting it as the car was coming towards me, but once I hit and went into the light and lost consciousness for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I was at peace
mm-hmm.
because I kind of made that shift with, okay, it's okay, and I'm going to a place where I'll be reunited with my brother, and I know people, my grandparents, and I'm at peace with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you wake up from the trauma that you're that it's a hard thing. Because
yep,
then you're in the crisis, and you're like, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not in a peaceful place. I actually lived through this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is. I like that idea of the whole thin place. I haven't heard it referred to that way.
Well, and most people haven't heard that term except the concept. They totally get it once
mm-hmm.
you describe it. And you just exactly described a thin place because it's like you just had your foot over on the other side to not necessarily die, but to get that feeling of what that was like. And as a spiritual director, you know, we talk a lot about discernment, you know, where is God in this? How do you know this is God? And that feeling of peacefulness is almost always present in those times. So you can be in the worst possible situation, and yet there's that peacefulness, which logically doesn't make sense. So to me, that's that evidence of a thin place. So there's got to be something
you know, that,
more.
That's got to be comforting for those folks out there whose family members did die in accidents and that kind of thing, to know that, strangely enough, right before, there's some kind of a peace that comes about. Well, it's time for our break, and we're having a wonderful discussion with Mary O'Keefe, author of Thin Places, and talking about where faith is affirmed and hope dwells. And she's the co-founder of the nonprofit Holistic Wellness Resource Center, and she's an author and speaker, and you can reach her through her website, the www.wellwithin.org. You can reach us through our website, thegriefblog.com. Please stay tuned to hear more.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Dr. Heidi Horsley. Just a reminder that Healing the Grieving Heart, Internet Radio, and thegriefblog.com are sponsored by the Open to Hope Foundation, a nonprofit web-based foundation whose mission is to help bereaved individuals cope with their pain and find hope in their future. My mom and I hope you will visit our foundation website at www.opentohope.com and become a part of our caring community.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi for our final segment of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who have suffered the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, we are talking to Mary Tracy O'Keefe, author of Thin Places, Where Faith is Affirmed and Hope Dwells, about end-of-life issues. Welcome back to the show, Mary and Gloria.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, Mary, I introduced your website, and I know you're working on a new book. What is the new book you're working on?
The new book is called Meant to Be, Do Things Really Happen for a Reason?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we can't really answer that question, but what this book is about is it includes the stories, well, like we were just talking about, you know, what happens when you share these thin place stories is people share them back with you. And so what happened after my first book is that I am receiving stories from people about their own experiences, which are wonderful stories, just like the one I told you about with the rainbow. And so this book is about those times in our life that uses a phrase that people so often use, it seemed meant to be, you know, with your brother. It seemed sort of meant to be that he had some kind of intimation, even though he wouldn't have understood that, but... So that's what that's about, and it's different kind of categories, including finding God in the midst of grief, finding God in difficult times, you know, and what these stories show you is that we aren't alone during the worst times of our life.
So you're looking for people to send in stories to you, right?
Sure.
For the book?
Yes, love it.
And what's your website?
Oh, it's called Mary Tracy, and that's Mary, T-R-E-A-C-Y, MaryTracyOKeefe.com.
Great.
And so, I was just going to add one more thing. I think sometimes we have to get a little further away from the loss before we can kind of wrap our arms around some of these concepts.
Yes.
Because at first I was very angry, and thinking of something as meant to be was not comforting to me. It would make me more angry.
Absolutely. And that's why you have to address these difficult times, because, you know, we all read those stories about miracles and the people that did listen to the voice and didn't run out in the street, you know, that sort of thing. But you're always left thinking, yeah, but what about my son, my brother, my mom? You know, why did that happen? Well, we can't answer the why, but we can reflect back and find where is the comfort in this whole situation. But you're right, it absolutely takes time. And I say go ahead and be angry, because we need to feel. That's part of grief, right? That's one of those steps.
So, Mary, I want to talk to you about, I know you give workshops and things about coping tools. Talk about soft belly breathing.
Ah, well, we talk about different ways to reduce stress and anxiety, and one of the easiest, fastest ways to do that is to simply focus on your breathing. And because many times, especially when we're anxious or stressed, we breathe way up in our chest, and, you know, you have that fast, shallow breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Soft belly breathing means taking that in and almost bringing it all the way down to your tummy, and you could even put your hand on your stomach and feel, you know, your breath going in and out.
So put your hand on your stomach right now, audience, and feel yourself breathing in and out from down there, because you're right, you breathe up in the chest when you're under stress.
And then I get heartburn when I breathe up in the chest.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right, exactly.
Oh, I love that, heartburn, yeah. We get a lot of heartburn connected with this. So what about meditation? And what does that mean to people? You know, what if I've never meditated? I mean, that's some guru in India or something. What do you, you know?
Well, meditation is probably one of the most common stress reduction techniques or mind-body skills, and there's many, many forms, but the simplest way to think about it is to focus again on your breathing. And, you know, you might start with that soft belly breathing and then just notice as you breathe in and you breathe out. And many people like to use a word, you know, like, or even a phrase, one, two. You want to turn it into a prayer, you could use a holy word, you know, or you could say something like peace in and out. And by simply slowing down and being mindful of your breathing, your heart rate slows down, your blood pressure slows down, and it's absolutely one of the healthiest things that you can do.
I remember when I worked in Strong Memorial Hospital as a nurse, there was a guy who'd had a motorcycle accident, and he was an expert in meditation. Mm. And he used to laugh. He would try to freak the nurses out. He would drop his blood pressure before, you know, they'd take it, come in once and take it, and then he would go into meditation. Mm-hmm. He could drop his blood pressure like 20 points.
Oh, my gosh. Yep. I believe that.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. You really saw how meditation can really work.
Yeah.
And he was in a lot of pain.
Wow.
So he was able to do a lot with that meditation. What about managing stress and anxiety?
Mm-hmm.
Are those the major ways that you'd suggest for folks?
Well, I think there's so many things that you can do, but in addition to what you do in your own practice, say the breathing or meditation or even exercise, I think exercise is tremendous. But another thing that we have found is it's really important to share your story. So, you know, I'm sure you participated or directed, facilitated support groups, and we find whether you're dealing with a serious illness or whether you're dealing with grief, it is absolutely invaluable. In fact, the story I told you about that was sent to me with the little boy in the rainbow, one of the paragraphs the woman said was, I'll just tell you, she says, a friend told us about Compassionate Friends, a support group for bereaved parents. They joined a few weeks after the funeral and found that group to be a lifesaver for them just by sharing their feelings. Well, that, it makes you feel good and calms you down, but there's also a ton of research about physiologically that does strengthen your immune system, and you have your body response to those opportunities to share with each other.
Now, what about people who don't want to go to group? Do you think your father would have gone to group?
No. Absolutely not. So that's why it's wonderful that there's so many things to do. So for my dad, well, actually my dad did have some really good friends, and he wouldn't have gone to a group, but what he would have done is called one of, what I would say his soul friends. Sorry, I'll talk about a little bit in my book, but a soul friend, those very good friends that he had since childhood, and he would talk to that one person. There's no way he would share in a group. For other people, maybe if you have more of an introverted side, then you can express yourself in journaling. The key is that you're learning to express yourself in some way.
And you could even, some people, poetry, songs, you could tape yourself. You could decide to do your family history and tape it. We find that sometimes the way men express themselves is through work. And, you know, like we had one guy who was building a house and had other guys come and help him. Yeah. So I'm sure they talk a little, or golfing. I know people that go golfing with friends, and probably a little bit seeps out during the course of the activity, but they don't maybe stay with it. Heidi's talked about teenagers playing basketball, right, Heidi?
Right, and I'm thinking with the golfing, sometimes people bring their golf clubs of the people that they know that have died, their children or their siblings.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes, yes. Yes, I think, did you write about that somewhere? I
probably either wrote about it or told about it. I played golf with a guy who had his son's, his club covers of his son's, and he also wore his hat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, can I tell you a little story, a little golf story?
Sure.
A short one. Friends of mine lost their 20-year-old son to a drowning accident. So again, that sudden, horrible, horrible, tragic death. A year later, on Memorial Day, they're at the funeral. Later that day, his youngest brother is out on the golf course taking along his brother's clubs and balls, and this kid has a hole-in-one. And any golfer knows that is the peak experience. And
absolutely.
It's sort of like he thought it was his brother giving him a great gift. Because of all the things this little guy would have wanted, and as he reaches into the hole to pull out the ball is the name is from his brother's college, St. Olaf College in Minnesota. And he just got goosebumps, and he just thought, that's funny. So absolutely, those things are very consoling, and they keep the memory alive. That's so important.
Absolutely.
And that's what he had, a thin place experience, right?
Yep. And he really wanted to share that. That's what's so neat, too, is that when people have these experiences, it's so important for us to affirm those experiences and listen to them and not to think they're weird, because that's why people may hesitate on sharing them. They don't want to be judged for these experiences. They're very real.
We'll talk a little bit. On the front of your book, you've got a rainbow. It's a lovely cover. Mm-hmm. And tell us about that rainbow.
There is a story behind that, and it's one of the first stories in the book. What happened was almost exactly a year after my father died, the night before the first anniversary, my best friend's father was dying, and we talked about that and how sad that would be, and we both decided that if the next day her father died, it would be kind of cool. We'd share that anniversary. And sure enough, he did die that day. So that night, I talked to my dad, and a lot of us do talk to our deceased loved ones, asked if Dad would send a sign to her family, as we'd gotten these signs, which is shorthand for thin places, to her family. The next day, I'm going to try to shorten this as much as I can, but the next day, I did see a sun dog, which is like a vertical rainbow. Tried to call my friend, because she believes rainbows are signs, as do I, and she wasn't home. So what I did was get my camera, driving around, two sun dogs, eventually formed a rainbow, and I took a picture of that, but it was hard to see, there was a sun in the middle of the rainbow, and it was hard to take the picture because the sun was there, and so I actually positioned myself behind a bird feeder and was able to take the picture. Later that day, I showed the developed picture to my friend, and she said, oh my goodness, look at this. It's like a Celtic rainbow, because the arc of the rainbow around the sun with a bird feeder in front of it diffused the picture into this. It was like a sign of a cross with a rainbow around it.
And it's a wonderful picture, and it is on the front of her book, Thin Places, Where Faith is Affirmed and Hope Dwells. And thank you, Mary Tracy O'Keefe,
for being on our show.
It's been wonderful having you on.
Thank you. And the picture's on my website. If anybody wants to see it, go to marytracyoccheefe.com.
Great.
Thank you
again.
Thank you so much.
Please stay tuned again next week when Miscarriage and Infant Loss with Monica Novak will be on. She's author of The Good Grief Club, and Beth Sendeas, Life Director of Compassionate Passages. This show is archived on our blog, The Grief Blog, as well as the Compassionate Friends website. Please stay tuned again next Thursday at 9 Pacific Standard, 12 Eastern, for more of Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley. Carla, Mary, and Tracy, thank you for helping people heal both during and after loss.
You have been listening to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley on Healing the Grieving Heart, heard live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on health.voiceamerica.com and worldtalkradio.com. Healing the Grieving Heart is archived on thegriefblog.com as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. Tune in again next week, and thanks for listening.